This is an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. To learn more about what we do, visit rtrfm.com.au.
This podcast was produced and recorded on Whadjuk Noongar Boodja. We pay our respects to elders past and present. This land was never ceded.
We're all over it.
Hey, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Pam.
And we're all over it, so you don't have to be.
This is your weekly deep dive on the important local, national and international headlines and what they mean for you. Yes, you. If you're listening to this, you might be an RTRFM listener. Maybe you're a Borloo or Perth local.
You might be my mum with her friends at work.
News can feel far-reaching and like it's not happening to you or happening to us, but it's all connected.
We're having a chat, we're having a conversation and doing our best to find a bit of context. Mostly making it so we have to look up less words when we read a news article. Hopefully making the news a little bit more accessible and finding out what it's got to do with me or you or us.
And we're going to help you along the way with what resources are connected to the stories that we bring to you and see what we can do beyond the headlines if you want to stay all over it.
On this episode, we are talking about the major headlines of the week, the three Ps, privacy laws, primordial crust, protests. Then we're going for a big yap, which will be about the Olympics.
Before we do, introductions are in order. Of course, this is the first episode of this brand new podcast. And Alicia, I want to hear about who you are, how you came to be a part of this podcast. What's going on with you? Who are you outside of in the real world?
In the real world, I have a background in behavioral science, political science. I'm now going on to do my postgrad situation in public policy because I love it. I have worked in some incredible organisations, including in the youth sector, which is something that's really important to me. Anything to do with community, I absolutely love and support. So that's kind of what brought me here today as well, because I love chatting, I love yapping, and I love doing stuff in the community if I can.
Gorgeous. Well, I'm Pam. If you tuned into this podcast and think my voice sounds familiar, you might know me from RTRFM's breakfast show with you every weekday to yap and play tracks and be there. I'm a journalist and I love the media. I've been working in it for a little while. I love to have a big yap and sort of get across what's going on in the news headlines, but I'm frequently confused by it. Despite having a background in interesting storytelling and wanting to care about it, I'm constantly confused, and Alicia is always that person that is able to make sense of those complicated stories for me. We're going to get into the headlines, but before we do, Alicia, what is your wormhole of the week?
My wormhole of the week is podcasting on Pinterest.
Okay.
I've never podcasted before. I'm like a crippling perfectionist, and I'm like, how do I podcast? So like my entire Google is like, how do I podcast? Can you hear the spit in my mouth? All the fun, et cetera, stuff. Pinterest says I'll be totally fine. You're in safe hands. I've done the research. So I've done the work. And Pinterest says we'll be good.
Love that. I think my wormhole of the week would have been microtonal music. There's a couple of artists around town that are making microtonal music. I didn't know what it was. I've learned what it
Please
was.
Please tell me.
Microtonal music is the notes in between the regular notes. Like if you're looking at a piano, it's like the notes that would be in between the normal notes on a piano. It's really interesting, and the music that you can kind of listen to learn about it is really also very bizarre. It's kind of jarring to listen to, but really, really exciting. I've definitely been in that wormhole. I've been really loving Fall and Eyelash, which is a local project, and they're making kind of microtonal music, but I've just been learning a little bit more about that recently. But that's enough of the wormholes.
Trendy wormhole, though. That makes me think you're very cool. I love it.
Let's get into the headlines.
WA implements nation-first privacy laws to better protect personal state-held data. That headline is from PSE News. In the wake of CrowdStrike last week, people were pretty stressed out.
Fair.
And if you've been a customer of Canva, Optus, Medisecure, my protein warehouse that I get my supplements from, you might know this feeling. This is familiar territory when you are confronted with something going on online and you're like, what is this? I don't understand the internet. My screen is blue.
Yeah.
Do they have my information?
That's what we saw, right? Just so many blue screens everywhere.
Big time. And I'm getting calls being like, should I take my mortgage out and cash? Should I do this? What should I do? It's a scary kind of situation. It's a murky world. It's confusing to navigate. And who do you turn to when you can't even Google things?
I honestly don't know. I just saw the blue screen of death and that became a part of what was everyone's week, right?
Yeah.
What was your experience of it?
I was in the library. I was on my little Macintosh and I had no idea until I started getting all these calls. And then I was Googling, what's going on? Google had no idea. They were like, we don't know, which I think is like the scary part of when something happens. There's this uncertainty of, we don't know what's going on. We don't know how long it's going to be down. And when will they fix it for me?
Alicia, get us across what's going on with this story.
Some legislation was proposed.
Yep, okay.
And what the legislation was saying was, we're here to protect your data. We're here to look after your rights.
Okay.
And the government's going to take care of it.
Okay.
And this is a government response, and we don't often see governments respond in this way.
Do we not?
We do not see this.
Okay.
There's some big kind of fun, funky reasons.
Yeah.
One of them being that legislation takes ages. When they dropped this legislation was originally after the MediSecure hack,
right,
which saw 12.9 million people affected and their health details leaked, which was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, that's really gnarly.
Yeah.
Is that the stuff that happened with the prescriptions getting out and people who have like e-scripts on their phone? All that stuff was leaked, right?
That's it.
I remember hearing about that and not really knowing if it was to do with me or if it had anything to do with me or how it might have affected me.
Yeah, that's the perfect intro because we don't have anything in our legislation.
Yeah.
That would help you to even know if it was
about
you.
We don't have anything at all.
No, nothing yet. Because legislation takes so long to develop. The legislation that they did drop when this information was made public, the consultation process started in 2019.
Wow, okay.
That's PCE, pre-COVID era. That's a long time ago.
That's a while ago,
babe. That's when they started talking to people about, what are you stressed about? What do you think about your information? What should we do with it? Conversation started 2019, 2020. There were some pauses there, as you can imagine. They were doing some other stuff.
Yeah, a bit busy.
And then we saw in 2022, they're letting us know that they're going to definitely do something about it.
Okay, all
right. Or in 2024.
Yep, all right. So, and something's happening now, right? So
something's happening.
What is happening now?
A bill has been presented into the House. Basically, what a proposed bill is that they're proposing a new law that they're going to put in.
Okay, right.
Or they're saying that they might amend a law.
Okay.
But that's what a bill is. So it's not in the stage of we've passed it or everyone agrees on it yet, but it is in the stage of, hey, we've got an idea, we want to change this law or
okay,
we want to make a new law.
All right.
They're going to change a little teeny tiny bit to a previous law from 1994.
Okay.
In order to bring through the new ones they're looking at. There's a few key things. I'm going to give you only the ones that are relevant because legal stuff is a lot.
I don't think
many people want to listen
no.
to all that. Even I was looking at it being stressed out. And then I remembered, I actually spoke to the minister about this and
yeah.
I know what I'm talking about
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Basically, we're going to put in some principles. So some information sharing principles, which means that there's kind of rules or if you're a therapy speak girly, there's some boundaries
sure.
about how the public sector or anyone connected to them can be using your info.
Okay.
How they should be storing it, what they are allowed to share, what they're not allowed to share. When you hear that, you think, surely that was already in place.
Right. Yeah, I would think that there was already protection measures like that, but we didn't have anything.
We have little different bits and pieces, which means that the government is struggling to communicate between departments. So the Department of Health might ask for something and then one of the other departments can be like, oh no, we can't give that information. And so people are saying, I don't want to give that information three times.
Right.
Just hand it over. So it's trying to streamline it and make sure that everyone's on the same page.
Okay.
But also if you're a provider that works with the government, because there's heaps of them, like MediSecure, like all these places.
Okay.
They're saying you need to have stuff in line.
Yeah, right.
You need to be prepared.
Right.
You need to be up in the ante a little
right.
bit. One of the biggest changes that's kind of exciting is that they are developing an independent body,
mm-hmm.
Which means that if you are affected by a breach or if someone else has been breached, there is an avenue of communication there. This would develop a mechanism for you to communicate with someone and also it gives a bit of accountability to the organisations that have been breached.
Okay.
They have to tell you that your information has been breached. They have to have a plan for how they're going to deal with it.
Okay.
And kind of we can move forward together from that spot. They want it to be as transparent as possible because we know that people don't feel super safe and don't feel trusting. And they're saying, look, you can see what we're doing. You can see our plans. You can see these guys' plans. And especially if you are a business owner or a contractor or anything like that, this is meant to be put in place to protect your your business, because the hardest part about being hacked is often the recovery. It can totally devastate. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot to kind of get into, and I think we'll see this develop over the next few months, hopefully.
Remnants of Earth's primordial crust found near Perth. This headline comes from The Mandarin. I didn't know anything about this, but I think it's a cool story.
I feel like it's a big journey to the centre of the Earth, kid. Like, I'm like, all right, like, I'm reflecting, yes. I'm thinking about Brendan Fraser, and I'm thinking about it all coming up, and I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah. Now, this is one of the only spots in the world, and we just found another one. Some of these super old rocks that they've found can be found in the Murchison District of Western Australia, which is 700 k's north of Perth. But in a new study, they found these super old rocks really far away from that and down south in Collie. To get a bit of context, to get a bit of understanding about this, we're going to pinch a quote from Chris Kirkland, who's the professor of geochronology at Curtin. Now, he says, to come to grips with the time scale, imagine the history of our planet was a year long. Are you imagining? Are you imagining? Are you doing the most imagining?
Yes, I'm doing my best.
The Earth formed from swirling dust 12 months ago. So that's what we're thinking about, right?
Gotcha.
So, like, this is, we're trying to go context-wise. So imagine the Earth formed from swirling dust 12 months ago. Any handful of sand that you pick up around Perth will contain a grain or two from about 10 months ago. Most of Australia's gold formed 7 months ago. Land plants arrived only 1 month ago. 2 weeks ago, the dinosaurs showed up. Alicia's eyes are widening as we say this.
What are you talking about? That is craziness.
All of humanity has come in the past 30 minutes, and you, soberingly, on this scale, your life would last about half a second. So to put that in context, that's how significant, that's how old this crust is. The sand, the grains that come off of this crust came 10 months ago, and across our lifetimes, we are half a second on this scale. Half of 1 second.
I feel like when I hear that, my mind just like starts spinning out of my entire brain. Like, I'm like, how? Before land plants?
Yeah. We're not trying to do existential crises here.
No.
That's not what we're interested in.
I feel we are approaching this territory.
But next time you pick up a grain of sand, think about how long those might have been around. It's important to understand the deep crust because we often find metals at the boundaries. This can help us map out zones for mining potential, but it also helps us just understand the way that we exist. So the fact that there's something so significant to this understanding here in Perth is really huge. Collie has been a mining town for more than a century and has powered most of the state's southwest. But WA government has been looking to diversify the economy, and they're kind of following a plan to phase out all the state-owned coal power plants by 2030. This is kind of significant because they've been trying to do this to attract new projects in the area and looking towards more renewable energy sources. Controversially, the federal opposition is looking to build a nuclear power plant in the town. Now, if we've got significant things like this in the town, I don't know if that's going to be a great move.
I think the idea with that was, I think it's like a small kind of nuclear mechanism situation going on. He wants it in old coal power plants, which is why this is the site that was chosen.
I understand.
What else is interesting about that and the reason that we might not all be across what that would look like is because it doesn't exist yet. The technology doesn't exist yet that he is talking about, which is Roger Cook said at the time. He was like, this is not viable on account of, what are you talking about?
Sure.
So there's interesting plans for that area. There's a lot going on for that area, and it's definitely one to watch, I think.
This next headline mentions domestic and gender-based violence. If you're not in the place to hear that today, jump ahead a few minutes. Help is available 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732.
Thousands rally against domestic and gender-based violence across Australia, calling for mental health support and training for first responders. This is from the ABC.
Okay.
You might have seen it on your Instagram feeds. You might have seen it on the news elsewhere. You might have seen it down Hay Street.
Down Hay Street?
Down Hay Street for the second time this year.
Yeah, there's been a couple of protests this year, but get me across what's going on with this story.
Right. So over the past weekend, we've seen protests across Australia. This is a conversation that we've had for many, many years.
Yeah.
It's a conversation that we had in May when Prime Minister Anthony Albanese declared gender-based violence a national crisis. And there was supposedly going to be a lot done there, and I'm sure that there was a lot of plans to be done there, but what we're seeing is rates of gender-based violence are not decreasing.
They're increasing. Yes.
At the time of recording, 54 women have lost their lives to gender-based violence last year, the entirety of 2023, was 74.
Right.
We're just over halfway through the year and we're at 54.
Yeah.
It's pretty concerning.
Yeah.
The big thing that happened with the government response was that they immediately funneled money into specific funding for survivors. And it was really specific, the kind of criteria that you had to fit into to be able to access the money, the amount of police reports you have to have been done. And I think that people felt that it wasn't considerate of the fact that gender-based violence can look different. It can look different for different families. It can look different for different people. It can look financial. It can look emotional. It can look psychological. And there are so many different things that we need to do to respond to that. And kind of one of the big ones that they're talking about, especially coming from the speeches in Perth, is about changing the behaviour of young men and changing the behaviour of young women and making sure that we're funding this from an early age, a preventative age, rather than just giving money to help flee. Especially when statistically you're looking at, that's not always the most helpful way to go about it. So what services are calling for is more training for professionals that are dealing, that are on the front lines here, whether that's teachers, whether that's police officers or emergency services. These people need training to know how to deal with this, especially as that increases. But basically, there's a lot more we could be doing and we're going to have to keep talking about it. And these are conversations that we've been having for a long time. And when you and I spoke about these, doing these stories, we both thought, oh my gosh, this is really heavy for our first podcast. And I would prefer to not unload that onto people first thing in the morning. It's pretty intense. At the same time, how long do we need to have these conversations for? I don't want to be quiet because I don't want to be part of that problem anymore.
Yeah.
There's so much. These are long conversations. So we have really incredible grassroots organisations, especially in WA. We have really incredible training. We have really incredible resources for people trying to leave situations. We have independent bodies, advisory bodies, public policy bodies. The problem is the funding. And this is always the problem. And I think, especially if you've worked in non-for-profit, if you've worked in any of these spaces, you know that money matters and making sure that people can access these things matter. So that's the big one. I would say that there are some positive things. A, that we have these communities, that we have people that care, that we have passionate people. B, we are seeing the federal government putting money into education, which is huge because that's usually state business is doing the education stuff. In WA, we're going to see just over $8 million put into education in primary and high schools to look at safe relationships and consent. It's money. It's suggesting that they're looking in the right spaces. Preventative is important.
Yeah, preventative is important.
Yeah. I think this is also a space that's led by a lot of young people a lot of the time. When we're looking at the Teach Us Consent, when we're looking at the what were you wearing, who organised these rallies, what were you wearing is like an advocacy body. They look at gender-based violence. They also look at kind of spikings.
Okay.
And other stuff as well. And then they're kind of putting public policy pressure on in the same way that we've seen Chanel Contos do. We see it over here with We Are Women do as well. There are so many incredible bodies and there are so many before us as well that have also done this. But I think it's exciting. And I know from a public policy kind of perspective, the only time we see quick changes in government is when public pressure is huge. And we're having that. And hopefully we're going to see some changes there as well. But there are so many amazing resources. Beforehand, this could be kind of discussed as this is a women's issue and there are women marching in the streets and all this kind of stuff. I think now what we're looking at is if you're a teacher, then you're going to be interacting with this and you're going to need to be able to learn how to respond. If you're working in any kind of front-facing role, then this is something that we're seeing in our culture. This is something that we're seeing in our media. This is something that is affecting everyone in Australia. We're not existing in vacuums. It's all connected. So I think across why people are marching and understanding how we can support that or if it has anything to do with you is something worth thinking about. I think a really incredible thing to follow if you're interested in the resources and training section of this would be the Domestic Abuse Resources and Training Group. They're the leading body for domestic family violence in Western Australia, consultancy and training, and they're fantastic. Yourtoolkit.com is a way to access services and kind of information and a kind of a step-by-step guide of if you're experiencing a situation like this or if you know someone that's experiencing a situation like this. And then lastly, the Centre for Women's Safety and Wellbeing is an independent advocacy body and they have support and services directory. So there's so much out there for anyone that might be going through this or if someone comes to you and is going through this, we can be prepared too.
All right, let's get into the big yap. Maybe you've been setting your alarm a little earlier like us. Maybe you've been staying up late. Maybe you've been chucking a sickie for work. Maybe you want to catch the breaking or the pole vaulting, or maybe you want to see the ribbon twirling. Alicia, have you been staying up to date on the Olympic goss, on the Olympic headlines? What's your impression of the news that we've been seeing all around the Olympic Games?
This is such an interesting one because I feel like you have to say yes. Like I feel like I'll get my citizenship revoked if I don't say yes.
Yeah.
And also half of my friends are saying, I'm waking up at this time. They've got schedules. They're planned. It's about representation. Like they're making these moves. And then the other half are like, "What? Where is it? What's going on? I have no idea about the Olympics and I simply don't care."
Yeah.
And so I think I sit in like an in-between space of there's interesting parts here. I don't know how much. I think that it's like when we talk about what has this got to do with me? This is, I'm constantly battling like, do I care? Because I just cried in a gymnastics routine. It was so good.
Yeah.
But also, what's going on here? There's so many headlines. There's so many angles to look at. So I think it's an interesting one to see where you sit on the spectrum of caring about the Olympics.
Yeah. Favorite sport?
Kayak slalom. I wanted to pronounce that correctly because I'm obviously a new fan. I've never heard of this before in my life. And then I saw them doing 360s in the water and like smacking each other's kayaks. And I'm I'm like a dedicated fan now.
Wow. Well, outside of the actual sports, there's been headlines galore all over the place. There's things that are sort of not about the sport, but coming into the news cycle that are sort of adjacent to the Olympics. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. There's all sorts from queer-focused news outlet Them. They said this is the queerest Olympics yet. Fox News says coaches might be sent home for being un-Australian. The Canadian women's football team allegedly used a drone to spy on their Olympic opponents. That's from The Daily, which is absolutely out of pocket. And people were threatening to defecate in the Seine. The mayor went swimming in it and it was safe. Now it's not safe. There's been a lot going on. I don't know if they're swimming in it anymore. It's definitely an interesting time. I think I'm more interested in the news around the Olympics than I am in the Olympics, to be honest.
I think this is really interesting. And maybe I think that I just have the shortest memory of all time. But when I see all of this, I think this is unprecedented. People are cheating. Countries are abstaining. What's going on here? And then I look at Google and it says, this has been going on forever. This is the whole point of the Olympics. The Olympics are a time when different countries come together and compete. That's international relations.
Aha.
That's what that is, baby.
So
that's
you're telling us that we're international relations students.
I'm telling you, potentially, if you are like a sport fan, you know more about international relations than I do. I've spoken to sports fans. They have like encyclopedic knowledge of different countries' histories and their politics because you have to.
Yeah.
Because this is where we watch it play out. So I think I did a little bit of snooping around on the internet. This is my second wormhole of the week, was looking at how political have the Olympic Games been? Because the Olympic Committee are saying, we are not interested in your politics. Fascinating.
So the Olympics said, we're not political. They put their hands up and said, we're not political. This isn't us, right?
Yeah. They went kind of Kamala Harris with it. They said, obviously we exist in a context. But they said, but we're not going to kind of give any credence to that because we are attempting to be non-political, apolitical.
Right.
There's no room for politics in sport.
Okay. Well, you know, Eurovision did a really similar thing this year. Sidebar, Eurovision came out and were like, we're not political, because there was a lot of people calling for them to ask Israel to not be involved in Eurovision this year with what was going on in between the Hamas-Israel war, the conflict, the absolute disaster that's taking place in Palestine. After the October 7 attacks. And there's definitely been an interest in sort of taking themselves out of the political context. So speaking to an expert earlier this year, I learned a little bit about Eurovision and how they didn't want to be considered political. It seems like the Olympics are doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing to say, I don't want to be political, but we see headlines coming out of who is allowed to wear uniforms, who isn't allowed to be wearing uniforms, who is being considered a nation, even though technically no one's recognising them as a nation.
So all the stuff about the AIN Olympians, so I don't know if you've seen this, but I think you might have seen this, but I think that it's interesting to see these Russian and Belarus athletes. They're not allowed to display anything from their country. You've seen this, right?
I have seen this, yeah.
And they get to wear a little special like AIN pin, which stands for Athletes Internationales or something. I can't remember the exact acronym, but they wear this little pin and they are allowed to compete as athletes, and when when they get up on the stage, there's no, you know, there isn't a national anthem that plays. It's like an International Olympic Committee song approved. They don't get to talk about where they're from, and they're not allowed to compete in a team either. So that's really interesting. But as a broader kind of conversation, what does that really say to us if we're international relations student, if they're not allowed to compete?
Well, I think what is interesting about the Olympics is that we're all going there and we're all trying to say something about our country. You've seen it if you are looking at the fact that they all wear the fun little pins, that they trade their pins, who's got the best pins. You see it when they're decorating their buildings. You see it when we talk about if you do this, then you're un-Australian. If you do this, then you are the correct Australian. We're trying to signal something about what we believe in and what we don't believe in. And historically in the Olympics, this is super normal. In the Montreal Olympics, we saw 28 countries abstain because New Zealand was allowed to compete in the Olympics.
Right.
They didn't want New Zealand to compete because at the time New Zealand rugby team was touring apartheid South Africa.
Yeah.
So whilst they apartheid South Africa wasn't competing, there were nations that didn't want to be involved in that. So there's always been an element of politics here, and we're watching what's happening at the moment, which is we're seeing a time of intense geopolitics. We're seeing the conflict with Russia and Ukraine. We're seeing the conflict in the Middle East, not only with Gaza and Israel, but we're also seeing Hezbollah.
Yeah.
So we're seeing different countries that are not getting along in this space trying to say something. We've got our own tensions going on here with China, and it's fascinating to see how we're talking about that and how they're talking about that.
So how are we talking about it?
I think that when we see different stories come out about certain countries are being more aggressive and certain countries are dominating or certain countries are allowed to wear things that other countries aren't happy with, I think we're going to watch it play out in the media. And I think that being aware of this context, being aware of where we're located as an Australian, is kind of the jumping off point. And I'm not going to tell you which stories are which, because I think we all have different opinions and different understandings, but I would encourage you to look through that lens when you're looking at it and look at what are we saying about our national identity, because we always talk about sport and national identity in Australia.
Yeah.
So what are we saying when we're talking about how we're dominating?
Can you expand a little bit more on one of the headlines we touched on this, at the top half of this big gap? Fox News says coaches might be sent home for being un-Australian. I think that relates to what you're talking about there. Mm. You know, thinking about patriotism is kind of associated with the Olympics. That Fox News coach might be sent home for being un-Australian. Why were they going to get sent home?
Yeah, so this was an Australian coach for the swim team, and he had worked with a South Korean swimmer beforehand. You've got to keep in context here. These are athletes. Everyone's worked with everyone before. So it would be like you working with other people.
Yeah, it feels like a musician that's played on the same stage as another musician. Or
it's a workplace.
Yeah, it's like
welcome to the workplace.
You know, it's a workplace.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important way to think about it, right?
100%.
And you're kind of watching all these relationships play out, and you know, that's your ex-colleague, yeah, right?
This is someone that you've mentored. So when this coach says, like, go this athlete, like, I'm proud of them, go Korea, I think that was meant as supporting another country, which is really when the Olympic Committee talk about, it's all about liberalism, it's all about supporting each other. And that's something that we hold close to ourselves. We say in Australia as a value is multiculturalism and supporting other countries and liberal democracy, all the big fun buzzwords. It is weird to say that you're being un-Australian because you're supporting someone else. But I guess there was concerns there that maybe the Australian team wouldn't feel supported. Maybe they'd be concerned that he's supporting someone else. It sounds a bit like an only child to me. Like, you can support more than one person. Like, of course you're going to go for them. You're contracted. But, you know, everyone's different. And it's something to be aware of is how we talk about countries.
Yeah.
Almost like they're people. Like, people say, oh, China did this, Australia did this. And it's like, okay, that's an entire country. That's like a political system. There are people in that. That's not one solid person that's done all these things. So it's interesting to watch them interact.
Like, all right, what's it got to do with me? How do we bring it back local? How do we understand it in relation to ourselves and in relation to, you know, us watching the Olympics? I know you've said look at it through a particular lens, but what's it got to do with us here in Australia?
Well, we're going to have the Olympics, 2032, coming soon. That feels like far away, but actually when you look at it, it takes ages of bidding and money and all this kind of stuff. So I think what was really interesting when I was looking through the history of the Olympics is that there's a lot of protests in the countries that they're happening in of, like, should we be spending this money here?
Right. That's kind of how Parisians reacted, right?
This is how Parisians reacted.
That's why they were pooping in the Seine.
They were. Rio, the 2013 Olympics, they needed like significant like million-dollar bailouts from the government to try and help and support them. There was large amounts of political violence over this over the years. There was a massacre in Mexico when students demonstrated. 200 were killed 10 days out from their games. It was a really significant political time, especially for that games. But this is not new territory to be looking at. Are we comfortable spending this amount of money as a country on this? And are we going to get the payback from it? And I think many Australians right now are looking at a wallet that is lighter than it has been a few years ago.
We're in a cost of living crisis. It's cost of living, baby, so it's hard, right?
We've just talked about a lack of services.
Yeah, and I'm sure that that tightness is being felt around the world, right? So Parisians having to disrupt their life, you know, they're clearing the streets and they're putting so much money into millions and millions and millions of dollars, into tens of millions of dollars, into cleaning the Seine so that they can showboat it and so that people can swim in it for this Olympic Games, when I'm sure that people in Paris are wanting their money to be spent on other things. And that was why that protest was happening. There was an app for people that wanted to poop in the Seine.
Oh my God, I was on the TikTok of it. I was watching.
It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is to Brisbane 2032. I don't know if we've seen much of a reaction so far from the Australian public finding out that Brisbane is going to be the host for 2032. But it's going to be interesting as to whether it's going to be a positive thing. Maybe it'll create jobs. But how disruptive is it going to be?
Well, I was reading the Queensland strategy of how this is going to be very exciting for them. And they were looking at maybe this is going to get kids into sport. This is their pitch. They're like, this is part of our big strategy to make Australia active again. Make Australia active again. Maybe it'll promote jobs. Maybe it'll promote tourism. The stats all say something different. So we'll see how that shakes out. I think also as a very young, hip, cool person myself, Gen Z's watch less. Millennials watch less sport. This is what the kind of data science is telling us. So if the generations coming up are watching less, then are you getting the return on it that you're hoping you're going to get out of it? Because you don't get something for nothing. We're hoping we're going to get something good out of it.
Yeah. When you see things like this happen, when you see interactions between countries or the Olympic Committee outlawing certain behaviours from certain countries, think about why they might be doing that and how that might sort of inform a larger understanding about what's going on in the world. As you said, sport people kind of know a bit about what's going on between countries, even if they don't think they do. So this is kind of the way to stay across it and stay all over it, is kind of just using that lens when you're consuming news and consuming media about the Olympics, around the Olympics, thinking about how that might be significant.
Thanks so much for listening to our first episode. We'll be back next Thursday with the headlines you need to know to stay all over it.
In the meantime, you can follow us on RTRFM podcasts or over at RTRFM on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. And don't forget to subscribe. Oh, that's you.
Yeah, I was like, and don't forget to subscribe to All Over It on iTunes and Spotify.
All right, see you next week.
Bye.